cycling has gotten faster and faster. But what proportion of that increased speed is down to tech? Well, one of the chief architects of this evolution in cycling speed has been the performance engineer Jean-Paul Ballard from Swisside. So we sat down with him in the Immenstaad wind tunnel to find out.
Let's talk about tech. It's not just aerodynamic, it's understanding. The more aerodynamic bikes also benefit the lighter riders. This sort of knowledge just wasn't there 20 years ago. Now, aerodynamics is this sort of this black art, this invisible enemy that it's really difficult to understand. There was probably 40 watts difference just in the equipment. We're not talking about seconds, we're talking about minutes difference. And that's where we are. Nowadays.
We spoke about the things that make riders faster, but also things that make riders slower, as well as the things that he thinks are going to make riders even faster in the future. We also talked about rider safety and the role that technology can play in that. He really is a fascinating person to speak to with great insight. So I hope you enjoy our conversation. And you should also be aware that prior to working in cycling, he actually spent a long time working as a performance engineer in Formula One before starting Swisside. And that has had a massive impact on the sport of cycling. Let's get to it. JP, great to see you and talk to you again. My first big question, cycling has got a lot faster in recent years. How much of that is down to tech?
Look, I'd say 80% plus is down to tech. And let's talk about tech. It's not just aerodynamics, it's understanding. So it's how we're applying understanding to making faster bike equipment, faster tyres, faster apparel, training techniques, data collection. I think all of this is what's making the rider power faster and the equipment faster, overall faster.
In the last 20 years, what have been the biggest advancements? Because there's been a lot, but like, you know, from where you've been sitting, what have been the biggest things?
Look, I'd say the biggest advancements have come from the scientific data-driven approach. So it's first about quantifying performance. So you know, back in the days, there was this big focus on weight. Everyone thought weight, saving weight, would make you faster. Riders really trying to slim down the equipment as light as possible. But there was no real quantifying of that performance. I think nowadays we've got a lot better at quantifying performance and therefore understanding what aspects deliver performance. And I think that's actually what's driven the big advancements in the last 20 years in cycling is we understand how to go faster and therefore we can targetedly develop becoming faster, whether it be from the athlete's perspective or from the equipment's perspective.
So has that been basically recognising that aerodynamics plays a far greater role than weight? And that is that the sort of main...
Look, you know, weight plays its role. Like, you know, in the Tour de France, we have stages where we have an arrival at the summit, 20-22%, weight is critical. But it's about understanding that for that situation, weight is critical. But for a lot of the other situations, weight is not critical. So it's just, again, it's understanding when is which parameter important, weight, aerodynamics, and how do we just develop our product and our complete bike rider system to be as fast as possible for each particular situation.
And does that, I mean, well, speaking of that then, how much does it differ from person to person? Because I can see that, you know, if you're a tiny little climber and the weight of the equipment is like a bigger proportion of your overall system mass, right? So is there situations where you'd go off, well, you can't just say for this person, this bike is... You can't say that the aero bike is faster for everyone on this course. Is it an individual thing that you would then go on, you know, a smaller rider where the system, total system mass could be more important?
Yeah, of course, like, you know, you have to focus on each individual case. But, you know, a lighter rider is lighter, so they go faster up the hill, but they've got less power to weight. So they've got less power output because of their less weight. But then they're smaller, so aerodynamically they're slicker through the wind. So a lot of these things balance themselves out.
So a big sort of talking point from last year was, as we've seen riders going faster and faster and faster, at the Tour de France, a lot of people were comparing climbing times from, say, the likes of Tadej Pogacar to, like, Marco Pantani or someone like that. If you were to sort of quantify that, what's the sort of difference you're sort of seeing, and what are you sort of attributing to tech?
Oh, look, there's compare those two, let's call it, again, bike rider system setups. I mean, differences are huge. You know, Pantani in those days, you know, climbing, no helmet, pretty baggy clothes, you know, simple tube bikes, narrow wheels, tubular tyres. I mean, there's, you know, let's speak at 30 kilometres an hour. Mm. There was probably 40 watts difference just in the equipment. And, you know, that's a 10% difference. Let's say, again...
Even at like that, the climbing speeds, you're seeing that much difference.
Absolutely. So if we go down to these lower speeds, you can still... The amounts just quantify themselves and sum themselves up. You know, also how the riders ride. You know, if you're watching Pantani climbing in the old days, he was a lot more out of the saddle. He was a lot quite high on the bike. You watch Pogacar climbing, these guys. They're seated, climbing on the seat. A lot of the time they're even in kind of the low aero position.
Yeah.
So there's a lot bigger understanding as well how to ride faster. So it's not just the equipment, it's how they ride. And in the end of the day, we can't forget, you know, the rider themselves is more than 75% of the aerodynamic drag,
yeah,
if we're talking about aerodynamics. So how the riders are getting the most out of their system to be faster, is where the differences are as well.
It feels like the seated climbing thing was something that really got pushed by Team Sky back in the day, when they were sort of making riders climb seated. I know that was like something that they definitely, you know, emphasised. And it was, I remember it being sort of stark contrast to at the time, Contador, basically just out the saddle dancing away and being a lot less efficient as a result.
Yeah. I mean, it's also about, like, you know, nowadays we can do simulations on the climb, you know, with the rider's power output, their W prime, so how they deplete themselves on a climb. And you can see that riding on the saddle at sort of slightly higher cadences is a lot more efficient. So you'll get yourself to the summit quicker. And this sort of knowledge just wasn't there,
yeah,
20 years ago. So it's knowledge just across the board that's led to, yeah, faster times, faster riding.
So if we something I'd love to do in the future is get our sort of, well, guinea pig Tour de France level test rider. I mean, on a single climb, Andrew Feather can do power output akin to a Tour de France rider. If we set him up and put him on a modern setup versus a Pantani style retro setup, up a climb, say like Alpe d'Huez, if he did the same power output, what sort of time difference do you think you would see?
You put me on the spot there. I mean, without doing a simulation, but I think it's measurable in minutes.
You know, really?
We're not talking about seconds, we're talking about minutes difference. And that's where we are,
yeah,
nowadays. Yep.
The other thing is, with regards to technology, is it a level playing field, in your opinion? Are a lot of bikes, are you splitting hairs, or are there, you know, people who are at certain teams that are at a much bigger disadvantage technologically?
Look, the level has definitely risen in the last years. We really see this. So, you know, each time I go to a Grand Tour race, you know, I have a walk around and look at the equipment, see what's news coming out. So the level has raised. But there are still teams that are just making, you know, errors in terms of their setups, or they've got equipment which is really substandard. So, you know, I still have seen tubular tyres running around, and we know that these are just no longer even in the ballpark of performance anymore.
Is that just rolling resistance? Is the
rolling resistance and aerodynamics? So both combined. So you know, we see these sorts of things, and yeah, there is a big difference between certain bike frames, but the level playing, the playing field's coming closer together, let's say. So, but yeah, there are still teams at a disadvantage.
Are there any, like, other sort of like notable examples? I won't make you name names, throw anyone under the bus, but like types of equipment, other types of equipment or things that you see, like, you know, in terms of, like, say, wrong equipment choices like wrong bikes or clothing or anything like that, that you think, like, why are you doing that? Like,
sometimes we, you know, obviously we spend a lot of time developing bike frames with partners, and we see certain elements on a bike frame where we can clearly say that's a marketing thing, it's a visual thing, which, you know, understandably, these bikes have to be sold to somebody to fund this whole spiel. So, you know, there are these visual features, but if your target is pure performance, there are certain features on bikes which we don't like. Certain pet hates, like oversized pulley wheels.
Yeah. Why are you not a fan of the oversized pulley wheel?
I'm a big fan in terms of the mechanical losses, not a fan in terms of the aerodynamic losses. And actually, you see they cancel each other out. And when you see that, some brands are asking a lot of money for that upgrade, it doesn't actually deliver you something. I'm more for real world performance.
Yeah.
Flying the flag for the customer at the end of the day. So, you know, there are certain things which I don't think are relevant.
Yeah.
I
saw Josh Tarling recently. It was just the UAE tour. We got footage of his time trial bike. He just took a little bit of tape over the back corner of the Jura Ace rear derailleur.
I don't know if that's legal.
I covered it up with a fairing. He's added a fairing.
It's a fairing.
That's a good point.
It's a tape fairing.
Yeah. You mentioned oversized pulley wheel systems, but are there any other marginal things that are considered marginal gains, right, that you don't buy into, that you think are not necessarily worth it?
Yeah, one of the things that I find interesting at the moment is there's a big push towards wider tyres. Absolutely, if you're riding on ultra-rough roads, if you're riding in the wonderful cobbles of Roubaix, if you're riding gravel, routes, whatever, you need to go wider tyres, lower pressures. There's a push that this is better for the end consumer. Of course, if your goal is to have a comfortable ride, to have great handling, and so on, absolutely, it's there to be placed. But if your goal is to improve on your best times, if your goal is to win races, there's a limit to where you want to go from the wider tyres, because it's a trade-off between aerodynamics and rolling resistance, and rollover resistance, so in terms of bumpiness. And so there's this big push at the moment that wider tyres are faster. They can be, but for road riding on typical roads, they're actually not that much faster. So this is a topic which I know you're looking into, which is one which I would like to be better explained to the general market, so people really know what is faster and what's a trend.
Yeah, it is really interesting that. I remember, I mean, it's, time flies, I think it might be 8 years ago, it might even be 9 years ago. I remember you looked into this a lot and you'd done some stuff with DT Swiss as well. And I remember the results at the time, you were saying, like 20 for just pure speed, if you were you distilled it down and said if you were averaging over like 32 kilometers an hour for a ride, so it could be like a Gran Fondo, I mean that's going pretty quick for a Gran Fondo, 25 was the optimum choice because of the trade-off in aerodynamics versus rolling resistance, whereas if you were say averaging 28 kilometers an hour, then sort of 28 millimeter tire is going to be a better choice and help you be faster overall. So I'm guessing you've done things subsequently and looked more at this, but has your opinion changed on that, or is that still a sort of rule of thumb you have?
Look, it's an ever-evolving landscape there, because, you know, tyre technology has improved, tyre technology has changed since then. So actually what we're seeing is that the 28mm tyres, there's not a huge difference between 28 and 25 in terms of rolling resistance at ISO pressure. But, of course, you can go for lower pressures with the 28, and it's the same with the 30, 32, and so on. You can just go for lower pressures. Now, where it makes a difference is if your body, your whole mass of your body and your system start shaking up and down, that's a lot of energy going lost. But if you're on a fairly smooth road, you're not going to overcome, you're not going to get a better rolling resistance, you're not going to get a better aerodynamics by going to wider tyres. So, it's one of my current sort of, I wouldn't call it a pet hate, I'd say it just hasn't been explained transparently to the wider audience.
Yeah, because I think if you're doing a time trial, for example, and you're on a smooth, decent surface, you still think like 25 way to go.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because I think a lot of people are moving towards like 28
for all the time.
I think it's important also to distinguish between front and rear. So the front tyres, you know, in the wind. So 25 millimetre tyre on the front for time trialling, no discussion. You wouldn't put a 28 on there. You can put the 28 in the back though, because it gives a little bit more comfort, maybe gives you a little bit more grip. Not a problem. But yeah, certainly for time trialling, you wouldn't go bigger than a 25 on the front.
Yeah, so you condone running different size tyres, like front and rear. I think a lot of people are sort of, I mean, it's normal that you do it on a car, especially like a rear-wheel drive car as well. And bikes are rear-wheel drive, so.
Yep.
Yeah, it does kind of make sense. Just, I think people have this aversion to it. Like they sort of think, oh, I've got to run the same size. Both.
Yeah, you know. Hey, and there's also this topic about, you know, rim sizes as well. You know, there's the topic of, oh, should I run a shallower front wheel? And actually one of the team riders of Decathlon Nage d'Isère La Mondiale asked me recently, after having looked through some data, should we actually be riding a deeper front rim than a rear rim? It was a very interesting question, but I think the styling police might have something against that. But I mean, coming back to one of our original questions, what I really love about the cycling industry now is there's a real hunger both from the industry and as well from your audience, from customers out there, to know more about the technology. And so, you know, it's pushing everybody to quantify things. You know, you say like there's, you know, the rolling resistance test rigs now where we can really start to challenge these ideas. You know, are wider tyres faster? Under what conditions? Let's go and test it. Let's prove it. Data doesn't lie. Mm. So I think that's sort of the fun part of what we're doing now. And what's driving technology in cycling is quantifying.
So you've developed like lots of amazing measuring techniques and analytical techniques to measure things within cycling. What would you like to be able to measure that you can't currently?
Ooh, that is a good one. Look, I think on-road active aerodynamic measurements are really cool. We've got our own devices that we use as part of our R&D process. The truth is you're really limited by, you need a certain sampling time. So this idea of, you know, I get out of my aero position, I instantly see on some sort of an aero meter the drag increase. It's unrealistic. Let's say you need at least 30 seconds. So there's always going to be a lag. But yeah, if I could wave a wand and make certain things possible, I think that would be really cool.
Yeah.
Live aero measurements. And what I really like is we see recently there's sort of some sort of more aero measurements coming into end consumer devices. I think that's really important because I think for, you know, aerodynamics is this sort of this black art, this invisible enemy that it's really difficult to understand. And because it's so important, if your goal is to be fast or efficient, it would be really good that we can give the cycling community and consumers good aerodynamic measurement devices without having to come to an expensive wind tunnel like this or to do track testing. So, I think that's something we're working on. We've been working on for a long time. And that technology will come to the market.
I think there's been a lot of them. I mean, the latest, latest Wahoo is great with that sensor in. And I've been using it, and when I particularly ride behind Conor Dunn, who's massive, it shows me how amazing he is to sit behind and what draft you get, which is great. But in the past, when I've tried to use like other sort of wind sensor products, there's been a lot of them sort of, you know, coming to market. I think the biggest problem I've always struggled with is just, and I think it's the problem why none of them have really taken off, is just that the rolling resistance issue, because it's so variable, it just throws the data off all over the place and no one's really been able to correct for that. So,
yeah, look, there's live aerodynamic measurements is actually a really challenging topic. It's also about how you do the measurement. So you have to do your measurement in a very structured way. You have to maintain your position. You have to do multiple repeat runs so that you can be sure what's your measurement accuracy.
It's quite hard for consumers to do, though, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, measuring your weight, checking your tyre pressure, making sure it's consistent across a whole batch of runs, starts to get very scientific. And, it would be nice to be able to have a system that can compensate for all of that, but the answer is it can't. So you have to measure in a structured way. So finding a way to simplify that process is good, but you can't oversimplify because in the end of the day, it needs to be accurate and repeatable measurement. So it is challenging, but we'll get there.
Following that, you know, in terms of bike aerodynamics and making riders, making cyclists and their bikes faster, where do we go from here? Like, a lot of people go like, oh, we've reached peak bike, that's it. I mean, is there, if you could wave magic wand, you know, what would you change and what do you think is the future?
Yeah, look, we're talking about bikes here, but we can't forget our invisible athlete who's sitting on this bike. Mm-hmm. Athlete, we mentioned it before, 75, even 80% of the actual aero drag, massively important. And we're just getting into the whole space of aerodynamic textiles since the last few years. There's a lot of performance still to come there, so especially at these really low speeds. So it's something we specialise in as well. So I think there'll be a lot of extra performance to come there.
When you say low speed, do you mean low speed for a cyclist or just...
No, I mean low speed, even, you know, everyone thinks, you know, time trialing, you know, 45 plus. Actually, aerodynamics is also really important and plays a big role in time at low speed, so 25 kilometres an hour.
Yeah.
And particularly with textiles, it's something we can impact at really low speeds as well. Also, I mean, if we talk recently, you know, there's a tyre that we were involved in the development of. One of the main targets of that tyre was to develop aerodynamic performance at low speed. So down at 30, 25 kph is actually where it brings its biggest benefit. So I think there's all of this learning we're doing at the moment. So there's still a lot more performance to come. And what's really great is that's performance. Let's call it the democratization of performance. Because for your average Joe and Jill, like me going out and riding, who's not doing your 35 or your 40K an hour average, who's doing maybe more 30, you know, there's performance there for us. So I think there's a lot happening there. So there's plenty more performance to come. We're learning literally every day, continuous improvement. Every time we develop a new product, we kind of already know at the end of it what we would do for the next one. So we're far from the limit. Back to your point of, you know, waving wands, what could we do if we could do anything regardless of rules? Like, I like you know, in Formula One, you know, you've got, I think, Red Bull and Adrian Newey did a kind of an ultimate car, like, throw the rules out the window. What mm-hmm. can we do? What could be the fastest sort of prototype? I mean, we could do something really cool with cycling, you know, starting to add fairings and all sorts of stuff around the bikes. Yeah, there could be a lot we could do, but currently we can't because the rules are constrained. But who knows? You know, when the rules change, we'll end up with new solutions.
Do you think handlebars are going to continue to get narrower?
It's pretty important for aero, but I think the UCI's got their eye on that one.
Okay. Another topic that's been very prominent in the news recently with riders talking about it is with the technology making racing faster, people saying it's too fast now and it's too dangerous and that's causing accidents. I mean, like, what's your take on that?
Look, you know, speed always plays a role. Of course, we're getting faster. And, you know, we're in the role of making systems faster or more efficient, let's say. So I think we do have to focus on safety. I think there's been a cultural shift. I think in the peloton, there's a lot more aggression. There's a lot less, say, respect in there. So I think there's a lot more crashes that are coming just because of...
Is that like something riders are feeding back to you? Right?
This is what I'm hearing from some riders. Yeah. It's changed in the last sort of 5 to 10 years. So people are just being... Riders are being more aggressive. But I think we need to address the problem and... Bikes are going to get faster. Equipment's always going to evolve. Mm-hmm. The brands like us are always going to be evolving around new rules. And we've still got riders riding around in Lycra with very little protection.
Mm.
And, you know, I think we need to sort of get the big gains first, which is how do we protect the rider first?
Mm.
And so, you know, I've spoken with a lot of riders who say, yeah, the biggest problems they have are graze wounds when they come down. So I think I'm a big advocate of we should develop or open up the rules because currently you can't have two different types of material on a jersey, for example. So we couldn't put a protective...
Is that what killed the development of that stuff?
Yeah, well, currently it's not legal, but I think that will have to be revisited. Because
if it's for safety equipment, you'd think they must do, surely.
Look, absolutely. And there are technologies now coming out in textile production where you can add other materials that provide abrasion resistance and so on, which would just be easy saves and prevent injuries on riders a lot. So I think we need to focus a little bit more on how do we protect the riders on the apparel they're wearing. I know the riders are a little bit... concern that they might get too hot and comfort. But there's a balance there to be found between safety, thermal management, comfort.
It does feel that sort of, sort of 7-8 years ago, there was quite a lot of chat about this. There was various companies that I came across that had developed various things. And then it all just seemed to die away and sort of disappear. And but it's something that's not gone away. It's a big issue.
Yeah, and I think, if the Peloton gets 4 kilometres an hour faster, is that really going to increase the number of crashes? I think a lot of crashes are happening at low speed as well. So I think it's my personal opinion is we should be focusing more on how can we protect the rider better, because that's something we can do today, and there are existing technologies in how we could tackle that. So I think, there needs to be a bit more of an open dialogue on protection, because currently there's very, very little.
That's a good sort of take on it, rather than a lot of what the other voices sort of been saying. They should just all be put on junior gears. Make them ride little chain sets. But yeah.
The sprint would be interesting then.
Yeah. I might even have a chance. Right. Well, thanks, JP. I think this wind tunnel that we're in is really cold. It's actually open to the outdoors, and it's Germany and it's winter. So should we go warm up and get a warm drink?
Let's do that.
Nice. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Ollie.